All right, they're back to me. It's me again. Sorry, this is the face I have. You're going to have to deal with it. There was a lot of Azure Function questions that were coming through, and so there is going to be some overlap. So if you're watching and your Azure Function question did not get on, please get it on, because we really, this Azure Functions just GA'd yesterday. It's kind of a celebration. We're going to almost do a whole session on it with halves on the other side, and also we're going to talk about container stuff. So why don't we do this first? Let's get some introductions of all the gentlemen that are here today, and tell us what you work on. We'll start with you, my friend.
So my name's Ross Gardler, and I'm the program manager on Azure Container Service.
Okay.
And I'm Mark Fussell, and I'm the program manager that works on Azure Service Fabric.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Chris Anderson. I'm a program manager that's working on Azure Functions.
So Yohai put this slide up of like, here's what Azure does, and it just like hits you in the face. Like, oh geez, there's so many things. What do I even start with? And so I'm glad we have you on. What we'll do is we'll go to Azure Functions at the end, just so we can get some time for Azure Container Service and Azure Service Fabric. They sound similar, right? So help me understand the difference between Azure Container Service and Azure Service Fabric. Let's start with ACS.
Yeah, sure. So ACS is about orchestrating Docker containers first, and we're a Linux-first environment. We are bringing Windows Server containers, of course, but that's currently in preview. And our focus is on the open source tooling that is around orchestrating and managing multiple container applications. So the idea is we extract away the virtual machines underneath. You don't have to worry about those. We provide a choice of orchestrators. Today it's Docker Swarm. It's DCOS, which is Apache Mesos at the core, or it's Kubernetes, which are really the three major orchestrators right now. And the reason for that is because we want to make sure we support all options at that layer. We give much more flexibility, et cetera, and you just build your apps against your preferred orchestrator and tooling within that.
So pretend I don't know anything, and this will be super easy for you, Ross.
Oh, we
like,
have.
Everyone's like, yeah, we can do that. We got this. So why would I containerize an application?
Right.
And then what are the challenges that arise when we containerize that requires this kind of orchestration?
Right. Yeah, it's a great question. So why would we containerize? There are many, many reasons why you would. Like most technologies, there are many reasons you could, and it depends on your use case. But the most common benefit that you find across all use cases is that they are very small, they're very lightweight, they're very fast to start up and stop. The way I like to summarize it, all of these advantages that come together, I summarize it as they give us the opportunity to kind of realize the benefits of what the DevOps movement has been promising us. It gives us increased agility because of they're so lightweight, because they're integrated development across different platforms, they'll run on any platform, et cetera. And it brings that agility that's been promised to us for so long. It really allows us to break applications down into much smaller components and manage them individually rather than large monolithic applications.
Mm-hmm. And so once you start containerizing all the things and you get down to small sort of bits of things that are fast to start and stop, you start to treat your code or your machines like they're cattle with containers, right? What are the challenges that start to happen? Because I imagine that once you start putting things everywhere, everything's everywhere. How do you
exactly
start to begin to understand how to even work with these things?
Well, that's exactly it. Everything's everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's your application design becomes more complicated. There are more connections between more pieces. There's individual pieces that may be working correctly or incorrectly. It becomes very difficult to manage all of that complexity across the infrastructure that you're running it on. And that's one of the orchestration pieces. So I talked about the open source orchestration tooling inside of Azure Container Service. It abstracts away that complication. It worries about where these containers are running. Are they healthy, et cetera? One way you can think about it is when you run an application on a laptop, you don't worry about the many processes that are running inside of that application. The operating system deals with it. And that's what the orchestrator does.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this also comes down to the microservices trend and what we're seeing inside the industry and what's happening here. And generally what we see is happening is that's driven by agility, where people are wanting to break things apart more, where before you had these tightly coupled applications, where you had these compile time contracts you had to represent, you had to build a single monolithic application to deploy all that, which had a lot of benefits, but you had to have these long DevOps timeframes and shipping cycles. When you start to break those apart and you have runtime contracts where you have networks across them instead, you have individual teams being more agile about pushing out changes.
And so, I mean, like I'm starting to understand, like it helps with the DevOps, it helps with being agile, it helps with getting sort of bits of functionality out faster, but there's got to be some craziness that happens. I mean, how do you know when a container stops working? How do you know how many containers you use? And I've heard, this may be a computer science maxim, that when you have a problem and you solve it with distributed systems, now you have like 20,000 problems, right?
Yeah, it becomes much more difficult to actually find the root cause of the problem. And that's true. So how do you know? Well, your orchestrator will worry about the simple things. Is this process running within the boundaries that it's supposed to run? But that's only that one individual service. And as you break into microservices, as you say, it becomes hugely complex.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, the microservices direction is kind of encompasses a few things. It encompasses agility. It encompasses you to be able to version things independently and scroll up and version them at different times. It allows you to use different technologies. You're not bound to only using .NET or only using Java. You can compile different services from different technologies. And so those are the main benefits that we see around that. From the Azure Service Fabric case, you know, what happened there was that Microsoft went through a journey itself. You know, we had all these box products, we shipped them all, they were very traditional design, and as we started to build services ourselves, we thought about, well, how is it that we have to be more agile, scale independent parts of the application more? And so we started to build our own platform internally, which eventually has turned into Service Fabric, and we run things like Azure databases on that, DocDB, Event Hubs, IoT Hub, all those different services. And inside there, you have to solve all these problems from, you know, a machine fails. How do I even know a machine failed in the first place?
Right.
When a machine failed, what was running on that? What was the set of processes? What do I do with them next? How is it that I do diagnostics? I mean, if there's one thing we've learned in terms of running things at scale is you better have a lot of good telemetry across this service. Otherwise, you have no idea what's happening inside that thing. So you want to pump great telemetry around these systems. So as you said, all these hard distributed systems problems we have to solve to think about how you build these. And generally, we see that what people want is they still want to focus on their business objectives
And
build, you know, the microservices design, but this whole platform that they need to have for a distributed app becomes extremely complicated.
So this is where I struggle, right? It seems like you're like ACS and Azure Service Fabric, y'all are saying the same things.
We're addressing the same problems,
yeah, right.
Definitely. So there's a gap, but there's a difference between our approaches.
Okay.
So with Azure Container Service, we are stopping at the orchestrator layer. We don't go into the application layer. We don't tell you how you're going to do all of the stuff that Mark was just talking about. Whereas Service Fabric, why don't you pick up?
Well, inside Service Fabric, you know, we have an orchestrator capability, but what happens on top of that is we provide prescriptive programming models. We have these programming models called reliable services that allows you to write little pieces of code that start up, very similar to like cloud services startup. We also have this thing called an active programming model that allows you to have like reliable objects. They're individual little pieces of code that just name themselves, and you can discover them wherever they are inside the system. You can create, you know, a million of them and just find this piece of code that has all its state and its functions encapsulated around it all. So these programming models help you build these distributed apps more easily. And that's the value add that we provide from a developer experience on top of the orchestration infrastructure that it also provides.
So would it be fair to say then that Azure Container Services sort of leaves the application design and however you want to structure things to containers, and then there's just orchestration just to know when they're dead, when they're alive, if you need to start a new one? That's ACS. But then Azure Service Fabric gets more prescriptive about how you do things in code.
Yes, that is true.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm learning something.
Good, I hope everybody.
Yeah, I hope so too. So it feels like as we're talking about getting to smaller and smaller bits of things that we run, that lends itself really well to Azure Functions. Because right now, like when we talk about the size of containers, I mean, how small do they get? And some people tend to think, well, maybe they get as small as a function, and that's where Azure Functions comes in. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Azure Functions? We've learned a little bit about from the other gentleman, but let's hear about from you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Functions really all got started because we saw customers using this cool technology we had called the WebJobs SDK. Mm-hmm. And it was all about being able to run just a bit of logic in reaction to any event that might possibly be out there that you're trying to run against. And, you know, what we wanted to solve was exactly what these gentlemen were just talking about. With just the SDK by itself, without having opinions about how it should be deployed, how it should be managed, how it should be scaled, how it should be monitored, it becomes harder to use in production cases. And so Functions was really a journey for us to bake those things into a platform and really let people focus on writing just a small amount of code so it'll, you know, react to an event and build out these services with just little, you know, functions.
So that's cool. I mean, I love how we're trying to, I don't know about you guys, but it feels like with computer science, we all get super complicated, and then we're like, oh, that's too complicated. Then we get super simple, and it feels like we're on this.
Yep.
they're like, oh, yeah. That's why we have jobs for so long, right?
Yeah.
It feels like we're on the swing where we want to simplify things, but in the process of simplifying things, there are some other constraints and problems. How does ACS solve those constraints and problems? I want to understand like the type of application that you would build and what ACS would do for you to help you in those applications.
Yeah, so the excitement around containers is the things that we're focusing on. So it's the highly portable nature, et cetera. And we don't talk a great deal about microservices. And the reason for that is that we focus on the orchestration of containers and management of containers as they're being deployed. So I tend to talk of smaller services rather than microservices. And it's very much a me thing. It's not a term that I expect to catch on. I hope not. Anyway, we don't need another one, do we? So where we're looking at is you can containerize significant portions of your application, even potentially your whole monolithic application, wrap it up inside of a container, and then slowly break it apart as the patterns emerge within your particular application, your particular design. And so that's why we draw that line between orchestrator and application.
Yeah.
Because we want to give the application architect the flexibility to do what is necessary in their use case. Because that's, containers are relatively new.
Yeah, that's exactly the journey along the microservices direction. You can take this big monolithic app and just simply containerize it and have that thing running. And then you can look at it and go, well, I'm just going to stop there. That's good enough. Or you can say, I'm going to add a new service on the side, a microservice that just does, you know, say it does a caching layer or it does some other new logic you have. And then you can stop there. Or you can start to look at that larger application and start to say whether you're going to decompose that thing apart into smaller ones, until eventually you might get to this nirvana of a beautifully broken apart, independently scaled and versioned set of microservices. But you know, a lot of people may not even get to that. And that might be good enough for them because they don't need to do it because it doesn't solve business problems.
Yeah. My professor once told me, you don't use a shotgun to kill a fly. When is Azure Service Fabric the shotgun and your application is a fly? Because it feels like there's going to come a time where it's like, look, I mean, just use a web app. You know, you're hurting yourself.
Yeah, I mean, with Azure Service Fabric today, one of the things, in the way it's hosted as a service inside Azure, is you still see full control of the full infrastructure below you. So we have this sort of interesting service where you have all the VMs that you own and provision, and you deploy Service Fabric into them. And although we come along and patch all those VMs and give it the latest runtime, you still have all the complexity of seeing the network, the VMs, and how you have to deal with all of that. And some people love that because, oh, I can integrate that with an existing solution. A lot of other people despise it because, oh, no, I have to think about infrastructure and things like this. So it's in that world at the moment. Once you go and get to the applications above that, of course, you then have to think about the application design. And there are so many things you have to consider, you know, from how you decompose your application down into individual components, to how you communicate between them all. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about how a microservice often is a piece of code that can be versioned and scaled, but then often has a sort of a known endpoint that you can communicate over. And at that point, you have to start thinking about how you deal with communication between services, failures, and things like that. But that's, you know, Azure Service Fabric kind of helps with the app design, but also has today some of the complexity of actually managing it in an infrastructure you own.
I see. And so, I mean, there's effectively a slider on, okay, app service, where I literally use a Git deploy and it's all just done, all the way to Azure Service Fabric, where you're setting up this entire infrastructure where each of the nodes have to have this Azure Service Fabric runtime so that it really creates this fabric of nodes, and then you have to manage that as well, too, where you don't want Azure to deal with that. Instead, you use like Kubernetes or Mesosphere or something like that to sort of do the orchestration between the containers. It's just like a slider. And then the ultimate slider is Azure Functions.
Yeah.
Now, who was the one that had the demo for us today?
So I had the demo for us today, yeah.
So why don't we get you to go over there so you can start getting your demo ready. And now I'm going to ask a couple of other questions about the types of applications. Because I feel like when we talk about things, it's very heady.
Yeah.
Like, if there's someone watching, let's just say Sue, she's a senior software architect at her particular place of employment. What advice do you give her regarding, okay, you should start looking at ACS, or you should start looking at Azure Service Fabric? What would you say to her about that? And then we'll go to you.
So I would say that any environment in which you have multiple services in an application, which is all applications pretty much, but you have some parts of that need to scale at a different rate. So there are elements that are bursty. So a concrete example, perhaps you're doing order processing in an e-commerce service, or you're doing image processing, or you're doing some kind of bursty workload. There'll be slow parts in that process, and there'll be fast parts in that process. And naturally, you're going to want to scale the services that do the slow stuff more quickly. Mm-hmm. So if you have that kind of workload, you're going to benefit the most from containerization. But even in a monolithic application where you don't have that luxury of being able to scale individual components up and down, you can still get some benefits because you have the improved portability of the code. You've got the same binary running on your development machines that you're running in production, things like that. But the benefits are lower. And then, of course, in cloud native, at greenfield sites, where you're doing new things and you know your application is going to need to scale differently. That's pretty much a given for many customers these days because of the flexibility at both ends of the scale, the management of it in production, where you're needing to scale up and down dynamically of individual components, individual processes, but also at the dev end. Because it's greenfield, you haven't got your dev process in place and so on. So you can leverage all of those benefits that you get with containers.
And so now that someone's thinking, wow, I should be using containers, why would they take the next step to use Azure Service Fabric, which then becomes more prescriptive over how you write your code?
Well, I think one thing that we've noticed in terms of how you build microservice applications, that there's some common themes and patterns that we see there. One of the most common themes that we see is that you have a sort of a gateway service, a service where you have all your requests come into, and it usually does some form of authentication and routing of messages. And in fact, we have quite a few of these just available in Azure today. So like IoT Hub is a great gateway service that you can use for devices where you have different requests from different protocols coming in. API Management Service is a great gateway for exposing certain APIs, and you can do all the RBAC and that. And then behind that, you can then build these longer running microservices on Service Fabric. And there, of course, we see that you build services that run for longer periods of time. You know, for example, we have lots of companies building IoT solutions on Service Fabric. And there they come at it and they go, wow, look, I'm looking at this device here. I've got hundreds of thousands of devices, and I can represent them in this actor programming model very easily in Service Fabric. So I can go into Service Fabric, create a microservice application, have the actors represent each of my devices, say create 10,000 of them, put this gateway in front of them now, and now I can say have the IoT Hub gateway taking requests from devices and sending it to an actor that represents their device and build this whole end-to-end solution fairly quickly because it has this prescriptive programming frameworks that help them build those applications and solve their business problem.
So if you're feeling like your distributed huge application is going to fit really well with the actor model, for example,
yes,
and you want to have robust storage that's sort of fail-safe and that's sort of replicated properly, Azure Service Fabric is what you should use.
True. I mean, you touch on another feature that we built as part of the services, and we started seeing more and more services that needed to do their state management. And with all this class where you externalize the state and they work very well, we also saw a class that kept the state inside the services themselves. We call those stateful services. Mm-hmm. So now you have this code and compute both together on the same set of services that you run. And so it makes it super easy, for example, to build a session state manager. We have all the session state running for a game, and it fails over and keeps that all there without having to write that all out to some externalized store. So cases where you have hot data, data where you act on now and you want that code, put it all in these stateful services. When you want to do analytics or you want to solve big documents, put that all into Azure storage because that's much, much cheaper than trying to use computers as storage layer.
And this is a lot of thinking. What if I just want to write some code snippets that do stuff? And I think that's where Chris comes in with this fantastic demo. Do you like that segue for you, buddy?
I love that segue.
Love it. All right. Tell us what you got, bud.
Yeah, so I mean, where functions really comes into play is where I want to build these services, and I want a lot of the things done for me. Our job on Azure Functions is to make your job easy. Just to talk about that pattern that Mark just talked about, where I might have a bunch of HTTP endpoints exposed, and I want to pass more long-running work back behind the system to be done in the background, we can just show just how simple that is using Azure Functions today. So in this case, I've created just an HTTP-triggered function. And you can see here it's called item, and I'm just going to upload an item to this function. And all I'm having to do to actually expose this HTTP endpoint and run some logic on it is this little snippet of code here. I'm even able to bring in types and strongly bind my body and things that are coming across against these POCO objects. And one really cool thing that we do is to make it very simple to actually send that data onto another queue service. So what you notice here is I have this bit of code here that's saying output.addAsyncData. And data is just coming from my body that's being returned to me from HTTP request. Well, when I look into the integrate tab, one thing that I notice here is that I've actually got an output for a queue. And this queue is just called output. And so what's happening here is that when I call output.addAsync, I'm actually sending that POCO object down onto the queue service itself. And so the great thing is that then I have this other function which is triggering off that same queue. It's called item queue in this case. And now I'm able to actually do some background processing. In this case, I'm doing some relatively simple work of just decrementing the count and then putting it back onto the queue. And then I'll kind of do an iterative, you know, set of work on this particular item by decrementing each time it comes into the system. It's very simple, but it's very easy now. I don't even have to bring in the storage SDK in this case, which is the kind of queue service I'm using behind the scenes. I'm able to just use very simple interactions as far as interface goes. I can always bring in those SDKs if I want to. The idea there is that I don't always have to. And so the nice thing with this is I can now send this a message. Here I'm just going to go ahead and send it, you know, my Azure message.
Now, what program is this? Because I saw someone use it beforehand. What is this program that sends messages out?
So this is Postman. It's kind of like a visual curl. The command line's great for kind of constructing these things, but if I have a more complicated request, it's really nice to be able to kind of see my headers, all that kind of stuff formatted visually. It's just an extension you can download. If you just kind of type into your search engine Postman extension, you'll see a lot of different tools out there for it.
Awesome.
And the thing that I did here is I just copy-pasted this URL that I have up top here into this thing, made it post, set my body as raw, and in this case, it sent it as text. We're smart enough to actually try to treat text as JSON if it's sent to us and we ask it for it to be serialized, but can also send it as, you know, specifically with the right content type as well. And then the other thing is that we've all done this via the portal, but one thing I really want to emphasize is that functions is in the portal, not because that's the only way of writing functions, but because that was the one of the faster ways of actually getting functions up and running. And our goal was for you to get started and get something solved as quickly as possible, but we always want you to be able to go ahead and use the tools that you might be expecting to use. So one thing I wanted to quickly show is that we actually do have some really nice tooling integration with VS Code for these settings. So I have a very, once again, another simple HTTP function. In this case, it's Node.js. And I've actually already gone ahead and just called a func run HTTP, which is the name of my function, and then add dash dash debug in there. And what that will actually do for us.
So I'm looking at func. Is that like a PowerShell or something?
We actually have a CLI that you can download. If you go ahead and do npm install dash g azure dash functions dash CLI, it'll install a CLI that you can then run a fully the full version of the functions host on your machine.
Wow.
There's no reason, there's no emulator there. It's the actual bits that are running on the cloud.
And it's just running locally, though, for tests.
But it's running locally. And so this is essentially putting the server back in serverless, right? A lot of our tooling stopped working in serverless once we started removing the application servers we were trying to debug against. Now that we can just install a version of the actual server that's going to be running my serverless functions, I don't lose any of those experiences anymore.
Right.
And this has been a real innovation in the serverless kind of community outside of just microservices. And so the nice thing here is now I can go ahead and call this thing, and I don't need to call it with dash dash debug after I go ahead and set up debugging for the first time. And now I actually have it already hitting the breakpoint I had set. And now I can see my full object. I can get the rich debugging that VS Code offers me. And the great thing is that now that this host is running locally, I can also hit it locally. If I go ahead and go to localhost 7071 and hit it with HTTP, you'll see that we'll also trigger the same demo, and you can see all the information that I'm getting across this. And the coolest bit is that if I, you know, add simple things like name equals world onto this, you'll see that we break this, and I can see that my name property is equal to world. And so we get real debugging, even though I'm building these serverless lightweight functions. I don't have to give up one to get the other.
And this is in Visual Studio Code. It's not.
Yeah.
So this is the editor that works on a Mac, on Ubuntu, and on Windows. So you can totally do this right now. That's pretty amazing. Another question I have is, would I ever structure an entire application using Azure Functions? Would there be, how would I do that, and what would that look like?
So I mean, where we traditionally see customers kind of running in and starting to use functions in the first place is in an extension of a lot of existing services. If I'm already consuming a lot of other Azure services, a lot of Azure's managed services like Event Hub and Service Bus, and I just want to extend them, functions, you know, adding a single extension to extend them is super easy. And then once I've done that, I noticed that, hey, I can keep on extending these other functions I've written with more functions. And so we kind of see that more iterative way of building these applications. We see people oftentimes doing it prescriptively as well, but it's nice to kind of see this kind of agile development of these services where I don't necessarily need to architect everything all up front. I can, in a much more kind of iterative fashion, build out these services. And you can do full services as long as you're not requiring state to be managed by the service, in which case you've got to kind of drop down to something like Service Fabric, which has more infrastructure control there. It's totally possible to build a full end-to-end applications with functions.
Would there be a way to make an API that's just functions-based?
Yeah, entirely. In fact, we have the ability to kind of define custom routes. So if you go back into the portal and we looked at our HTTP triggered function, we have the ability to actually choose which route we want to go ahead and do. So I can go ahead and, if in this case, I've got this hooked up to CI/CD because I can hook up my functions directly to GitHub. And once I've done that, it's read-only. But if I go and remove that setting, I could actually go and add a custom route for my function and make sure that each one of my functions responds on a different route. Is using the ASP.NET web API route structure, so I can give it any route that I would normally pass to a web API controller. And so that means that I can do, you know, wildcard routes or very specific routes, all kinds of things.
Holy cow. I mean, effectively, you can do away with having to write a web API, and you can create this sort of API that evolves as you would, however you'd like, by adding functions and adding routes. It's like effectively having this Swagger file that keeps growing and growing and growing based upon what you're doing.
And that's one of the great things that about functions is not only can you do that with the HTTP stuff, but I can now also build out background processing things in a very similar fashion, right? It's one thing to be able to go from writing a web API to then doing background processing with queues and service bus, et cetera. But now it's all in the same experience. It's the same programming models in a lot of these cases. And it really makes building an end-to-end microservice just that much simpler.
Awesome. All right. Do you have anything else to show us? Or are you good?
No, we're good. We're
awesome.
Good.
Back people are places. Popping up Teams on you. See, we're using Teams now here at Microsoft, yeah. And so that's why you saw Jeremy Thake come, and he was probably telling you something super important. All right. So now that we've gone through some demos, we've talked a little bit. Let's go through some questions and let's see how you answer them. Now it's time. It's hot seat time for you guys. All right.
Okay.
So from Noel, do public containers share VMs across different users? That's a very interesting question because if I understand this, containers, there's multiple containers per VM, and we're managing them.
Right.
So what does that look like?
So people who know about containers will be aware of the need for this question, which is containers give you a level of isolation, but it's nowhere near the same level of isolation you get with VMs.
Right.
And so the answer to the question is no. We do not share your containers on a VM that is used by somebody else because of that lack of isolation. Now, in Windows Server containers, we have this thing called Hyper-V containers. And Hyper-V containers help to address that problem. They give a higher level of isolation, but it doesn't change the answer to the question, certainly not today anyway. So when you stand up as your container service, you get your own VMs and you're deploying your containers to your VMs. And I believe it's the same for Service Fabric.
Yes, it is, yes.
So you're never going to be like, we got extra space on this VM. Let's just put some of customer B's containers on there because customer A is maybe not using the VM. That's not something we do.
No, we won't do that.
Okay,
they're the customer's VMs.
That's good to know. Yeah. Next question, you mentioned container support for Linux and App Service, but will it support Windows containers soon as well? Tell us a little bit about Windows container. Is it the same as Nano Server or container? I mean, Nano Server is different than containers. I know this,
yeah.
But sort of explain the spectrum to us if you can, you guys.
Well, I guess the way I look at it is that you have Windows Server as an OS that allows you to have a container operating system, a container orchestration inside, containers inside it all. Nano Server is a smaller footprint, and so it has a minimal footprint without any of the UI that you can install OS components on, and it contains container support. So I think those are the two. So they have containers built into it, yes.
Okay. Next question. App Service is built on Service Fabric, correct? Have you considered doing a case study on how that was built, or perhaps even release it so people can run it in their own cluster?
App Service is not built on Service Fabric,
okay.
So we can't publish a case study on it because it's not the case.
Yeah. But I would answer this question in a slightly different way. It doesn't really. App Service is a hosted offering, and you publish all your services and applications up into that. Part of this comes down to as well where, you know, we built Service Fabric as a distributed systems platform to host our services, and what we see is about 40% of our customers still want to run something on-premise. So back at Ignite, we actually released what we call Service Fabric for Windows Server, where you can just take a set of Windows Server machines all by themselves, hook them together with a network, copy Service Fabric onto one of them, and then run a PowerShell command that will build your own cluster on-premise. So now what you can do is you can build it on your own set of machines, you can test it locally, run it here, run it all in production. And many customers do that because they have some existing data centers and build things there. And then later on, they can then decide to go to Azure, go into the portal there or through ARM, create a cluster there. And any applications they build on deploy on premise, they can also deploy to Azure itself. So you get this very flexible world. We say you can run it on any OS, in fact. In fact, we even have customers who've taken that Windows Service Fabric Windows Server and deployed it into AWS and are running in production there because they can.
Interesting.
So that flexibility of being able to host your platform inside your own data centers is something else that's very attractive to people because you actually end up with technologies on premise like AD, SQL Server, and Service Fabric that mirror the same inside Azure itself with Azure databases and AAD there as well and Service Fabric. So you get the portability and the hybrid side of things.
And that's an awesome way of migrating to the cloud if you want to do that. You can literally start on-premise, build your own Azure Service Fabric, get your applications on there,
correct,
be happy, and then push it up to the cloud.
Yes, and the customers that do that is because they have some policy reason inside their company or because they have some compliance of their data or just because they have a whole bunch of data center already that they want to use it on. So it's a migration thing. It's another part of this migration path where you can choose where you want to be.
All right, next question. Azure Container Service focuses on openness and choice. What are the advantages and disadvantages of this approach?
That's a good question. Certainly one of the advantages is similar to the advantages of Service Fabric running anywhere. These are open source technologies developed by the community, developed by a broad range of people who are running them in many different environments. And so what that means ultimately is you can take the very same technologies that we're using to build Azure Container Service and run them wherever you want. You can run them on your laptop. Last night, just coincidentally, I set up an equivalent of Swarm mode on 3 Raspberry Pis. It's a good experiment with my son, but now I'm thinking this is a great demo. So, you know, build your own data center or your simulation of the data center for your development environment, et cetera. That's probably the largest advantage in terms of adoption today. In terms of what it means for the future, though, that area, the Linux container ecosystem, is a huge area of very rapid innovation right now. And all that innovation is centered around Docker container image format and a small handful of container orchestrators. And those are the same technologies that we're focused on in Azure Container Service to make sure that, A, we can participate in that, we can bring our expertise to that, the learnings that we have across the company in doing this work, and we can benefit from that so that we can bring those benefits to our customers. So lots more agility, lots more innovation, lots more flexibility. The disadvantage is answering the question, which orchestrator should I use? Because if you look at all of the innovation
there's
in that space,
choice, right?
There's a lot going on. It's not just orchestrators. What's the solution for you? Talked about stateful services.
Yeah.
Service Fabric, don't worry about it. Service Fabric will give it to you. The broader Linux container ecosystem, well, there's a lot of different options out there. Which one do you want to pick and which one's going to win out, which is the right thing? So it's not just a choice of orchestrator. It's a choice of all the different components inside. Choice and flexibility is great when you want choice and flexibility.
Like, and I understand sort of logically what containers do, but then once I get down to the metal of like, where am I storing the customer? And how do all the containers know about the customer? Do they all access the same database? If they do, isn't that the violation of some like principle that I shouldn't be violating? Once you get down sort of implementation details, I struggle with containers myself. Yeah. There may be people out there that do, and maybe I'm just not a good programmer.
There's a few experts out there who don't struggle, but most of us do.
I agree with you. I think there's still a lot of work that we have to do inside containers itself. I look at containers as the next level of virtualization, but just this week, I've been helping a customer, and the first thing they said was, okay, so I've done these containers, and how do I do certificate management? And what do I do? Is a certificate in the container, or is it outside the container? What do I do? How do I manage this? How do I do the networking between containers? What's the best way so I can talk from one to another? Because in the end, in the real world, you have many of these things.
Sure.
Doing security as a whole will become a big problem. So I think there's a lot of things that we'll have to build out and platforms that will have to evolve to help you with these things. And I know, for example, Windows Server is doing a lot to make sure their Windows containers authenticate with AD to make that very easy for you in that environment when you start to use Windows Server containers. So your networking, security, and you know, activation are all other things we've still got to think about.
Yeah. And just even being stateful. I mean, in Azure Service Fabric, there is some stateful services.
Correct.
But if you're just using plain vanilla containers with Mesosphere or Kubernetes, did I get those right? Those are the orchestration?
So the orchestrator is DCOS.
DCOS?
Mesosphere is the company we've partnered with behind that.
Okay, DCOS. And Kubernetes is the Google approach to...
Well, that's an open source technology that originated with Google, yes. Okay.
And then that's something we can run. And that's an orchestration tool as well?
That's correct.
Okay, and so, like, how do I start to think about how I save and persist data statefully in these kinds of applications? Yeah.
So this is one of the advantages of the Docker ecosystem as a whole. So the Docker runtime, that's the thing that actually runs an individual container or a group of individual containers, which is, so it's a layer below the orchestrator. That has volume plugins, which worries about that kind of thing.
Okay.
So you can have volume plugins that will connect to Azure Blob Storage, that will connect to Azure File Systems, that will connect to mounted disks and that kind of thing. If I may, I just want to take a very small step backwards to the openness question.
Let's do it.
And I just want to highlight something that we announced last week. And that was that as well as using all of this open source software, one of the things we've done in order to learn and accelerate that in learning across our customers and ourselves is we open sourced what we call ACS Engine. And ACS Engine is actually the code we run inside of Azure. Now, it's not significantly useful outside of Azure and Azure Stack because it works with ARM templates, which are only applicable here. But where it does make a big difference is where we have customers and partners who are addressing the kinds of issues that Mark was just talking about. We can work directly with those partners. We do all of the development in that GitHub project. And so that's a place for us to bring all the learning across customers and across partners into one place so that we hopefully can solve those hard problems sooner.
Yeah, and it's not trivial. I mean, distributed systems has been a field of research for many, many, many years.
And that's exactly, I mean, inside Microsoft, we built Service Fabric as a platform over many, many, many years, starting with Azure databases to have a platform running like this. And your state management, you point out to, is one of those hard problems we solved. And we make it acceptable or approachable inside developers by providing these .NET classes. We provide reliable dictionary, reliable queue that you can use to replicate their state so they deal with this as a familiar concept in terms of programming languages, but they get all the benefits of a distributed platform replicating the state for them and things like that. So that's one of the benefits it provides as part of a prescriptive programming models and platform we provide in there.
Can you mention sort of, I know that sort of Azure Service Fabric grew out of necessity, and it's something like, oh, wow, we use this, it's useful, let's let our customers use it. When we talk about the products that were built on top of it or that sort of helped inspire its creation?
Well, most of it was inspired through Azure databases when we started building that 10 years ago now. And it was like, take SQL Server and how do you host it in the cloud? Well, you know, what do? You put one SQL Server database up there. Okay, you got one, or then you put two, then you put three. What happens when you get to thousands and how do you manage all of that? So you have to end up thinking about how you cluster machines together, deal with failures inside machines. When a machine fails, how do you move the database? Make sure no one's data is lost. I mean, you'll be very annoyed if your data got lost.
Right.
How you handle particularly the lifecycle management. We spend a long time how you do rolling upgrades. So how is it that I can roll out version 2 of my service, copy the same binaries down as the machine, make sure I do health checks, make sure that services come up correctly, in this case, an Azure database in service instance. If not, roll back to the previous version, the telemetry and the diagnostics from that, all done at scale. And so as we built services like this, particularly Azure databases, and DocDB was close behind us as well, particularly these storage services, the platform that emerged from this was Service Fabric. And since then, we've used it to build other ones.
That's a nice way of saying, Seth, we learned through a lot of pain and grief.
Yes.
Azure Service Fabric is years of tears and sweat, is what you're telling me, right?
Yes, it is.
Effectively.
Yes.
All right, so let's get to some more questions. Any word on when we'll see support for Windows containers and IIS and Service Fabric?
Yes, in fact, a release is coming up later this year is that you'll be able to use Service Fabric because it's an orchestrator of processes today, and mostly we just activate processes on machines. With now the release of Windows Server 2016 and its container support, and the release is coming up later this year, will actually allow you to orchestrate a set of containers as well. So you'll be able to download a container and have that run next to your process as well, and have this mixed environment of using some of the microservices platform code that we provide as a programming model, or download a container inside that as well. And your choice between them all. So we actually see people, for example, take IIS applications, containerize them, and they can run them inside Service Fabric.
So you said something super fast that I think maybe if people weren't listening, kind of, you said Azure Service Fabric is a model for managing processes.
Well, today, yes. So today, I mean, if you think about the steps, if you think about process, container, VM, they're all different levels of virtualization, yes? Well, today inside an OS, you can launch processes. So most of the apps we launch are just deploy an application, start the XE, off you run. And we have a container model for just launching all of those inside Service Fabric. Docker containers and containers as a whole has been now started to become an industry format and an industry direction. And so picking up that and just using that as another form of virtualization is a natural extension of it.
Awesome. Next question. Is Service Fabric recommended to use only for building micro services? That feels like it feels like the definition of microservices is sort of hard to pin down, right?
It's like, I think that's why we're all here, about microservices as a common theme between
we're
it all.
To decide.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what is a microservice? He's a small service. He doesn't like it. So The answer would be no, but can you explain why?
Well, I think the way you think about microservices, you know, it's, that's why we talk about the industries going towards that. And it's how you do a design of an application for those characteristics of microservice, agility, scale, you know, and the ability to independently use different technologies. What platform you use to that is up to you how to think about this. You know, that's where you can build all of this with great open source technologies and run it on Azure Container Service, and that's one completely viable way of building a microservices architecture. Inside Service Fabric, we've provided, you know, that orchestration layer, but on top of that, some programmables to help you from a microservices design perspective. And then on the function side, of course, you know, that individual piece of code, well, it's just a microservice that launches for you.
It feels like there's a theme emerging. But we still can't decide what, like, how many lines of code do you have to put in an Azure function in order to make it a microservice? I mean, are you going to go on a limb? Two.
Like,
one.
You can do some amazing things. Like, the code that I showed in my demo there, I could have reduced it down just a bit more. And you could have a HTTP service that pumps something to a queue service in, like, one line of code. Right, and you can run PowerShell and bash off of that. You can start writing PowerShell microservices in that sense. So there's a lot of crazy things that you can end up doing in this space. The, really what it comes down to is the philosophy of how you're structuring your product, if you will, right? If you've got this set of things that you're building, that's going to be your product. Microservices is a strategy of breaking them up into modular pieces. Just the same way that in monoliths, you'd still build that monolith in series of modular pieces. Microservices is just a strategy of building out a product in those individual pieces. And you can build a microservice full product using all three of these solutions if each part of your product calls for a different strategy.
And so you may even have a microservice application that uses parts or all three, maybe. He's like, wait a minute, that feels too Frankenstein to me.
Especially like, you know, functions extending either one of them, right? If you end up in a place where you don't want infrastructure control, you want to just throw your hands up and say, hey, run this for me. That's what functions is there. It's there to run your function for you, right? And you don't want to actually manage the infrastructure pieces or think about how it's going to be orchestrated at all. Functions will handle that piece for you. And so like there you can kind of have a nice combination where when you need the infrastructure control, when you want the infrastructure control, it's there for you. And when you don't, when you want a GitHub webhook, like you should probably use functions for that. You wouldn't spin up a service fabric cluster to just serve a webhook.
And there are some microservices you have which by their very nature are sort of more long running. You always want them to be able to constantly handling process. You know, if you're having something that is constantly taking data from, you know, from feed, and it's always going to be up and available. It's quite high throughput. You know, running that as its own service all the time might be on a particular machine might be your need inside there.
I see.
You know, you might have to have some dedicated machine or hardware, or a dedicated machine to run that and scoops because it's of the demands of that.
And so, like, you can build all of Azure SQLDB on Service Fabric, but like functions you can use to maybe build your runners for Azure SQLDB. Like, that's kind of like the kind of levels of things you can think about there, where they play together.
And I like the approach of like, look, I'm like the pragmatic dev. It's like, look, just make something work, and we'll clean it up later.
And microservice, if
look, he's like, wait a minute, I don't know if you would ever work for me, Seth. not in Azure Service Fabric, dang it.
I mean, you know, our job is to make customers successful, right? Yes. So oftentimes that ends up involving a fair amount of pragmatic pieces that we then work very hard to make it easy to make maintainable over the long run, and not just whatever you hack together in an afternoon.
So a question I had is, you mentioned that you can do routing into Azure Functions as if it were an API. Is there a way to make it secure as well?
Yeah, so I think we might have shown just a bit of this in the last session we did, but Functions is running on top of the exact same platform that App Service Web Apps is running on.
I see.
So a lot of those features for securing your web applications apply to Functions. So I can go ahead and go into my the Function App Settings part of our menu, click on the Add Authorization button, and we have the ability to add Facebook, Twitter, or particularly useful AED authentication in front of all of your HTTP functions that you have. And so the idea there is that not only did I not have to then code in the authentication, it was a single button click, and I still get that full end-to-end AED flow throughout my function API.
And then once you've called a function once and you've gone through the flow, does that session or that token sort of remain valid for a specific amount of time?
Exactly, and you can even set it up so you do have the single sign-on capability. So if you've already gone ahead and signed in and on like your main web application, you just have these kind of APIs being exposed off of a SPA then you can easily have the token passed along to your
functions. And I assume that that includes sort of SSL protection as well.
Yeah, with app, with functions, you get a default domain name, which is your function app name, .azurewebsites.net, and that comes with SSL for free out of the gate. You never have to worry about having SSL available to you. If you want to do a custom domain and bring your own SSL certificate, we also support that.
That's awesome. Awesome. So next question for a Greenfield project starting now, 12/2016, which needs to run on Docker on Linux production, what does MS recommend, app service or app or service fabric and why? So I think, okay, so Greenfield project, they're going to do Docker, Linux production, app service or service fabric, why?
So we mean Azure Container Service rather
than
Azure Service?
Yeah, Azure Container Service, and you, you may even like scale back and say why you should just do an app service, right?
Well, app service is much more difficult because app service generally you're talking about single containers.
Sure.
So unless you know the use case, it's hard to answer in the context of app service. If it's just a single container, then quite possibly app service would do the job. But the it was very specific about Linux containers and Docker container images. And so today, as of this moment speaking right now, the recommendation, I think, has to be ACS because we're Linux first and Docker first. That will change in time. And
yes.
We're GA.
Yes.
Yes. The production is there, isn't
yes.
it?
Well? Yeah, there so is that, the production part that's important.
Yeah, that's kind of important.
Yeah.
So no choice today, it's GA. But Service Fabric, you have it in preview with Linux?
Yeah, we at Ignite, we announced Service Fabric for Linux preview. So you can go and go into the portal or ARM and create a Service Fabric cluster using a Linux queue. Ubuntu is the one we support today, but we're going to have other versions of that. It's in preview right now, and we'll GA it next year. So in other words, you can take all of the similarity, everything I talked about from our programming model perspective. But on the Linux side, we do it in Java. And there, so the program models are in Java. We have plugins for Eclipse. We use Jenkins for the build process, and we sort of have a different set of tools. But that's still in preview, and it's going to take several months yet, many months yet, until we actually GA it.
Yeah. So, and then, just one more point to consider as well, although it's not clear in the question. I would assume that because it says Docker on Linux, that we're talking about using the standard Docker tooling and the tool chain that is provided within the Docker ecosystem. Inside of Azure Container Service, that's what we expose. So we deploy the cluster for you, and then we get out the way, and you're using the API-compatible tooling, so any tooling that talks to Docker endpoints or to whichever orchestrator you want to use as your endpoints will continue and always be applicable within Azure Container Service. In Service Fabric, there's some Service Fabric-specific tooling available as well, isn't there?
On the Windows side?
Yeah.
Well, eventually on Linux as well.
Yes, on Linux as well, yes. Yeah. We have some specific tooling there. I mean, we have Service Fabric built in as well into a CI/CD pipeline that you can do publish, deploy, go through VSTS or GitHub and things like that, and we'll do a similar thing inside on the Linux side as well.
So I'm looking again, and I'm glad I'm getting the distinction about how Azure Service Fabric is more prescriptive about how you build these applications. Azure Container Service is more like, hey, you're using containers. We're going to have a way to control them and orchestrate them. For each of these sort of Azure Container Service and Azure Service Fabric, there is some process that is running on the VM that knows about either the containers in Azure Container Service or the application. Would that be a fair thing to say?
Yes. I mean, with Service Fabric, you literally take a set of machines, you deploy Service Fabric on each one of them. We have this agent.
Which is a process.
Is a process. Fabric.exe runs on every one of them. It actually communicates between the machines and builds a cluster, and all of these orchestrators work in the same way. They build a clustering technology around it all. Then usually they kind of detect whether the machine is up and running, and they can detect when the machine fails. And then in the Service Fabric case, you can ask it to launch processes on its behalf, and then it manages the processes running inside there or the containers, and similar sort of thing that happens. So you can determine whether a container's failed or a process failed in the case of Service Fabric, and then it makes a decision about where's best place to launch this thing again. And so it decides the capabilities of another machine or the capacity constraints of the application itself. I mean, one of the things you get in Service Fabric, for example, is we have these things called metrics, where you can actually report the usage of your application, the amount of disk space, the amount of memory, and things like this. And then Service Fabric keeps track of what machines have used what capacity inside there all, and so it does the best possible packing around all of those things.
But there's a process that's also running for Azure Container Service as well.
Yep.
But that's not doing the same kinds of things that maybe Azure Service Fabric is doing.
Well, no, it's doing essentially the same things. It's just that it's only worrying about containers because we're only deploying containers. But we have the same thing. All three orchestrators, they have the software that runs on each of the VMs that is aware of what's running on that VM, the state of those. They also have the concepts of masters, which are aware of the larger cluster of VMs and all the things that you need to, or the larger cluster of containers that you need to run and how they run. And it's essentially the same. as how it happens in Service Fabric. The model is that there's obviously differences at implementation level, even amongst the different orchestrators. But the overall process, when you get to the boxes and lines point of view of how it works, yeah, is the same, right?
And for app service, like that's, and, you know, I think the right answer is just kind of back to the infrastructure control thing, right? When you're talking about containers on app service, you're talking about containers as just a deployment mechanism, yep, to your normal just app service instances. And app service is going to scale with your little slider bar that you get. You don't have to worry too much about actually having the VMs provisioned and maintained. App service is going to do that for you. So you're just kind of moving yourself down the spectrum of PaaS when you start using the containers on app service. You're looking at it from the deployment mechanism and less the more powerful orchestration concepts that you would get with ACS or Service Fabric.
And that was a good phrase, the down the spectrum of PaaS, yeah, I think is a good phrase.
Yeah, it was the slider, yeah, concept that we were talking about. All right, so a couple more questions. We're about 6 minutes before we're done. What is the security story for functions? We talked a little bit about it, but they wanted to get more in depth. For example, role, resource, action, claims, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, so essentially today, when you're talking about non-HTTP security, you've really just got the access that you have to who can actually deploy to the function, et cetera. The rest of it's just enforced in your standard fashions. Whatever connection strings, whatever permissions those connection strings themselves have, you know, you can give a SAS key as the actual key that you use to authenticate to the storage services, et cetera. That ends up being your level of control. For HTTP is where it gets more interesting. You can go ahead and set up authentication, like AD authentication in front of your application, enforce various AD application security controls via AD. And generally, we rely heavily upon those different authentication providers to do the additional security. But then otherwise, anything that you'd want to do inside of your application itself for controlling who can do what, setting up some kind of RBAC policies inside of your functions, that's totally possible for you to implement.
Awesome. Next question. Can I write an Azure function as a .NET console app that I then publish to Azure Functions and use to replace an Azure worker role? I feel like there's going to be some moving of stuff to make it work, but is it possible to do something like this?
If you must. Yeah. So the thing is that today Functions doesn't understand .NET Core as like a native thing. It's something that is really, really high on our roadmap. We're basically going to be chasing a lot of the last few features that .NET Core is still finishing, where we need them, things like app domains and stuff like that. So we're going to be working really hard over these next few months to actually get full support for .NET Core. So the reason I kind of hedge there is like, well, maybe you just kind of sit pretty for the time being. If you needed to move to Functions, you could easily have that console app uploaded with your functions and have a batch script, a batch-powered function or a C# function that calls to the executable and invokes that thing. And we have support for .NET Core on Azure App Service, which is our underlying platform, so you could call it to it directly, but you're going to be jumping through some hoops that I think you might be best suited to just waiting a little bit longer.
Another question that sort of goes along with that from Mike. My web application relies on 32-bit Windows DLLs. Do they have to go before I can benefit from any of this? That's a good question. I mean, it feels like you've got some legacy code. I mean, how do we make this work?
Well, I think there are two ways I think about that. I mean, one thing that we encourage, at least on Service Fabric, is you can actually launch any piece of code that you already have as an executable that will run on the machine. So you can simply say, take this code. We have a manifest description that allows you to launch it all, and we basically keep that reliable. So you can say, create 10 instances of it. So it's possible, as long as the executable is built for the environment it runs in. I mean, the other way that people are going is that they take all these things and the whole point of containerization is that you can build this into a container with a set of binaries, a set of dependencies, all self-contained as an image format, and you can pull that down, it'll run on the platform of your choice. So, you can take legacy code, existing code and sort of containerize it. So that's why we see this migration and the use of containers as virtualization technology to do that.
Here's a good question from Craig, and I'm going to paraphrase. Well, I'll just read it and then I'll paraphrase it. How easy is it to quickly develop locally, say, for example, on a website front end in Service Fabric? Or even more, like Service Fabric is by default requiring you to think about it in a distributed way. How do you work on that locally?
Well, I mean, Service Fabric, we have a developer experience. And just like we saw with functions, when I deploy Service Fabric on my local box, it's exactly the same bits that we run in Azure,
right,
on your local machines. You know, one of the difficulties we experienced and discovered with cloud services is we built this emulator on your box, and it was very similar, but it was never quite the same, and people said it ran locally, and they didn't run when they deployed it, and they got very frustrated. So you'll see now that what happens is we very focus at Microsoft on making sure you have the same bits you have inside Azure run on your local box. So you saw it with functions, Service Fabric has the same, I just install it there. In fact, as we've rolled out the new bits across Azure databases, a couple of weeks later, you get it as an SDK on your machine.
And that's impressive, right? Because I'm remembering this now. There's a way to run this sort of Service Fabric emulator while you're building applications. Did I get that
wrong? Well, I wouldn't use the word emulator.
Please, tell me the right word.
We just say Service Fabric on your machine is kind of mimicking.
Because it's not exactly the same thing, but it's enough to know if things are
working. It is exactly the same runtime. It's no difference. It's just that we'll launch it and make it look like whether it's a 5-machine cluster on your 1-machine box or not. And so you can make it look like 1 node, 5 nodes, 50 nodes, whatever your machine capacity. And so you can play around with it all. But for all intents and purposes, it is the same runtime on your machine as we run in Azure.
And so that's why when I said emulator, you're kind of blocking. You're saying, it's not emulating. It is what it is.
It is what it is, yes. We just made it run on a single box. So you have this sort of like data center or say cluster concept on your machine. And I think that's a very powerful experience.
That's one of the advantages of working with Microsoft technology is not only are we really open to all the different technology out there with things like we're doing with ACS, but Function, Service Fabric, we're both really focused on building great developer tooling experiences thanks to Visual Studio and all these other great backgrounds that Microsoft has. We do it better than anyone else out there, and I think because we do it generally as open as we possibly can, you really have not a lot of downsides there.
Awesome. Well, I feel like that's time. That's been very productive. I've learned a lot. Thank you so much, gentlemen. We'll have to come back. We'll have to come back to you and maybe get some more videos out as some of this stuff comes out.
Love to do that.
All right. Well, we're going to turn it over to Dimitri, who's going to take us now to the next session a little bit. All right, Dimitri.
All right. Well, thank you, Seth. It was a great session. And fun fact, we were planning this day. Mm-hmm. We only had one Azure session originally. And then the team convinced me they had so many topics they needed to. So we extended the day. So that's how Seth got to have fun twice when it comes to Azure. And we've got a good one coming up. What do we have?
Yeah, we've got coming up intelligent data-driven apps with bots.
Bots.
And we also have a video. Me too. I want to get obsessed with them, but I don't have time right now, but I know I will.
Yeah, I'm just reading also. I haven't coded much of it, but I want to.
Yeah, I've gone to talks, and every time I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, that's the way searches should work. Oh, yeah. So great.